From alpine skiing to paddle boarding, hockey to motor racing, we've covered a wide variety of sports in the 7 years since we started Sportspiel. However, today we cover new territory once again as we welcome England lacrosse midfielder and talent athlete group star Liv Thomas to the podcast. Despite being in her early 20s, Liv has already had to deal with a lot in her sporting career so far. From COVID making her wait 2 years for her England debut, to winning a World Cup bronze in triple overtime, sustaining a serious knee injury, and the financial, organisational and physical demands of managing her status as an international athlete with a full-time job. We also speak about her hopes for the future of lacrosse after it was included in the LA 28 Olympics, and how Liv wants to join other female athletes in continuing to put women's sports alongside men's. Welcome, Sportspiel listeners, and today we've got a very special episode because we are delving into a new area for us, and that is the world of lacrosse, a brand new sport for us. And I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Liv Thomas. Liv, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on and great to talk about lacrosse. And yeah, it's interesting because it's something we've never spoken about before. So thank you for joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we'll cover quite a broad range of things in this interview, but I guess starting at the very beginning, lacrosse is not necessarily a sport that you get introduced to often at an early age. So just wondering how you got into it and how you first discovered it.
Yeah, so I think I started playing at school when I was about 11. So I went to Godstow School in Buckinghamshire. And that's where I started playing it. But before then, I was involved in all sports I could play from a young age and had that sporting edge. My parents are both fairly sporty, so I always watched my dad playing rugby when I was younger. So always wanted to get involved in sport, and that was just a sport that was offered to me at school when I turned 11. Everyone played it, and from there just kind of fell in love with the sport and went from there really.
Was there anything in particular about the sport that hooked you straight away? Was it a straight love for it, or did it take a little while to get into it?
I think it's obviously quite a hybrid sport in the way that you have to have some sort of hand-eye coordination. There's equipment involved. It's a lot of running. There's tactics involved. Obviously, when I was 12, there weren't that many tactics involved when I was starting playing, but learning a new sport was exciting, and realizing from when I started playing it that I was okay at it and it was something that I picked up fairly quickly was also obviously that was also I quite like a challenge, and that was a challenge. I was fairly young, so I don't look back on it and go, oh yeah, that was a challenge, I really enjoyed it. But I think how it incorporates lots of different aspects of sport is quite exciting.
You said you went to a school that played it. Was that quite common in that area, or was the school more of a one-off?
I think lacrosse is different to most sports in the UK in that it's really only played in private schools, which is a shame because it means that the player pool is a lot smaller compared to hockey or netball. So there aren't that many schools in England compared to other sports that play lacrosse. We'd have to travel quite far to play matches against other schools. I remember a couple of hour trips on the bus, right? You wouldn't really have a local league, for example, it'd be other schools that you're travelling to play.
And how did you find that when you were sort of getting into the sport, or did you sort of embrace it and actually enjoy the away days and the long trips and the chance to bond with teammates?
Yeah, I think you've got to enjoy. If you enjoy the sport, you've got to be willing to travel to play for it. And I think the bus journeys always tend to be quite fun, especially if you're going to play a good game and it's exciting and you enjoy the sport. And then I obviously played other sports when I was at school as well, so it wasn't just like I was traveling a couple of hours to play lacrosse and then didn't play anything else. I played other sports alongside. So.
Was there anything in particular about lacrosse over other sports that really engaged you with it and really attracted you to that sport?
I think the teamwork is a massive part of it. Netball, obviously, I played when I was younger, and it has the teamwork aspect, but it's a professional netballer would obviously pick me up on this. There's a lot of running, but at that young age, it was there wasn't as much running up and down the pitch, and I liked that aspect of it, and kind of being able to you weren't really confined to an area. I played midfield, and I still do, but I could go anywhere on the pitch. I could go behind the goal. I could score goals. I could defend. I could do everything, and I liked that from a young age, and that's an area that I still enjoy now. But yeah, other sports, tennis obviously was teamwork, but there was only two people. And I think I got a bit frustrated with it. But I think all of the sports I played when I was younger have all helped me now. So obviously didn't specialise too young or whatever, but I think the lacrosse had an aspect of all of it, which I really enjoyed.
And are there any moments that really stand out to you as being special memories of playing lacrosse at sort of a younger age, or is it just the whole experience was just really enjoyable for you?
Think my first tour to the US when I was at Godstow, so I must have been 12 or yeah, 12, and we went to the US on tour, and that was my first proper exposure to lacrosse outside of the small schools that we played in England. So just seeing how huge it was in the States, and the level of that at that point, they had different sticks that were legal in the US that weren't legal in the UK, and just the level of playing compared that the school levels difference to how we were playing in England was when I was like, wow, this sport is something else in the US, and that's what it could be eventually in the UK. So that was pretty cool. I think that's first memory.
Is it very different than in the US to how it is over here?
I think back then it definitely was. They start like they pick up a stick as we would with a netball or a hockey stick or a rugby ball. It's the same age. They play from a much younger age. The colleges out there, or even the high schools, the facilities that they have is on a completely another level to what we have here. So I think that was something that I saw those and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So
And do you think that England is catching up, and do you think that things are definitely improving? There are more opportunities for people to pick up a stick and play lacrosse.
there are more clubs in the UK that have formed. I think there still needs to be work in incorporating it into schools, not just private schools, and even it's quite specialised sometimes to all girls' schools. So there still needs work compared to the US, but I think we're slowly getting there.
And forgive me, I've not played lacrosse, but I went to university where a lot of it was played, so I've watched a bit. Am I right in thinking that it actually, you talked about not specialising at a young age. Am I right in thinking that it actually brings so many different aspects of so many different sports together into one package? Is that sort of a correct summation?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think some people that haven't played lacrosse before would describe it as hockey in the air, potentially. So the size of the pitch, the way the ball moves could be compared to hockey. A lot of people, the kind of moves that we use, the picks and stuff like that, is quite similar to basketball. I remember when I was at my senior school, our coach took us to a basketball pitch and was like, right, basketball pitch, basketball court, and was like, right, we're practicing our plays on this basketball court with a basketball. And we just thought, what? But it didn't make sense then, but it does now looking back on it. Like a lot of sports crossover. So yeah, I would agree with that.
And for you, I guess a lot of athletes get asked this, but was there a moment when you were growing up and playing the sport when you realised I'm actually quite good at this and I could go all the way to the top, or was it more of a gradual process for you?
I think when I was at Godstow, so we only played in our last 2 years, and I picked it up fairly quickly. So I thought, okay, that's probably a good starting level that I felt confident in, that I was doing pretty well. And then my coach at the time, Fiona Reynolds, she put me forward to the England National Academy, or the program to get onto that. And then at that point, I was like, okay, well, she wouldn't put me forward if I was rubbish. So I must be fairly okay at this. And then from there, once I was in that program, then you start from there and you gradually go up. So I think It's called Centex when I first joined. It's not called that anymore, but that was, I think, under, I can't remember what age group, under 15 or something, but that was like regional academy. Then you go up to national academy under 15. Then you go up to under 19 national academy. And that I followed through all the way from when I was 13 trialing for that now to the seniors. So I think from that point, that's when I knew I could potentially make it if I tried hard enough.
And going up through that process, was always the goal to represent your country, or was it just to see how far you could get and just keep enjoying it?
I think it was definitely always a part of what I wanted to do, was to play for senior England. When I got to the under 19 stage, that was pretty cool, but I knew from that point that my end goal was always to play for senior England.
And you made that international debut, am I right in thinking, in early 2022?
Yeah, so it was meant to be in 2020. So I got selected for the senior A team in the home internationals in 2020. I think it must have been early March when we got the selection. And then 10 days later, we were in a national lockdown. So could have been 2 years earlier, but there was no international competition for between 2020 when we went into lockdown. And the first international game back was in January 2022 when we went on tour to Florida and we played Puerto Rico. And that was ended up being my first cap.
How did it feel to make that first cap and pull on the senior shirt for the first time and be representing your country?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's an experience that, obviously, I've just mentioned that when I was younger and first got onto the England pathway, you kind of look up at the senior England players and like that, I want to be that one day. And then you put on the shirt and you actually do that yourself. It's pretty cool.
Did it make it even more special, or make it feel any different, do you think, having had that 2 year wait in due to lockdowns and COVID?
Yeah, I think it was frustrating that obviously lockdown happened and that I think there were four of us that were supposed to get our first caps on that home internationals and then we couldn't. So yeah, it felt like a long awaited, obviously that first home internationals, I didn't know whether I was going to get selected or not. And then you wait 2 years and it's, oh, come on, please. And then when we found out that that was when our first cap was going to be, it was obviously unreal to hear and really happy about it. Yeah.
What happened with lacrosse as a sport during lockdown? Was it quite heavily affected by lockdown, or did you manage to sort of return to play fairly early on, but in some sports it was quite sort of managed environments with social distancing, or did you have to wait quite a while?
To start with, we did nothing. We weren't able to. Lacrosse is fairly high contact. You had to be fairly near people. So unless you're standing 10 metres apart and throwing a ball, it's pretty hard not to have contact. I think, I can't remember how long it was into lockdown, but we did start to do some, obviously, to all the COVID guidelines, and England Lacrosse released some COVID guidelines as well. We gradually got into doing some team sessions, but we weren't able to be anywhere near each other. It was like passing or walking through plays and stuff like that. But because we're not professional and because it's not our job, it's not deemed as necessary. So, it was a weird year and a half or however long it was until we could start to get back into things. And then when we could start to get back into things, we had to have hand sanitizing breaks every 15 minutes, or we weren't allowed to touch the balls and stuff like that. So it's weird looking back on it now, but it's obviously necessary and we had to do it, but it's just like adapting.
Was it, I guess, frustrating for you seeing other professional sports going back, and even though you're representing your country, weren't getting the opportunity to go back, or did it sort of make sense and you were happy to follow the guidelines?
Yeah, it's frustrating. Like you're obviously going to feel that, but at that time, that's what we had to do, and those were the guidelines. So I think we just all cracked on with our individual training, used it as an opportunity to absolutely nail our fitness and our strength and the things that we needed to work on and could do individually. And then when we came back as a team, we were stronger, and then we could focus on the team stuff.
And you came back, made that debut in 2022, and then just a few months later were selected for the World Championships. How did that moment sort of, how did you find out you were in the squad, and how did it feel to earn the selection?
So obviously unbelievable scenes when I found out. I was quite boringly just sat in my bedroom. It was quite late, and refreshing my emails, and then it came through, and I was just skimming and saw that I was selected. And it's not very easy to describe how it felt, but I was just obviously extremely excited, and what an unbelievable opportunity for me to be able to, three years after my under-19 World Cup, be able to play in a senior World Cup and represent my country in the senior, and be able to play with some of the players that I looked up to when I was 17 or in the junior side of things, and now playing with them at a World Cup, that was pretty cool.
And how was the whole experience for you, that first senior World Cup?
Yeah, no, it was great. And just even, I think my first draw that I took, so I'm a draw taker, so at the start you do a draw to start the game. And the first draw that I took was against an Australian player that I obviously knew very well, and not personally, but I knew who they were. And I was literally shaking like a bean when I was taking the draw. And once that initial moment is over, it's fine, and you're obviously nervous, and but no, it was a really great experience, and I loved every moment of it. It was great, and really great to be with the team and to like get all the kit and stuff like that. It feels really real when all of that happens. So yeah, no, it was great.
Were there any other than the obvious highlight right at the end of the tournament, sort of going through, what were the key moments that you really remember, either on or off the pitch, that really stand out as being special and memorable to you?
I think I obviously experienced it when I went on tour to Florida earlier that year, but it's just getting to know your teammates properly. Like, we have loads of camps and training weekends, but when you're with people for two and a half weeks, and you're living with them, you're eating with them, you're resting with them, you do everything with them, it's like those off-pitch moments are as equally important as the on-pitch moments. And all of those, there isn't one in particular moment that was extra special, but it's just getting to know people better, and those kind of off-field moments are great.
I think that's something that maybe is not necessarily talked about that much in sport, but that actual time spent together to bond as a team off the pitch, is that really sort of important to you as an athlete, sort of not just knowing what they're like on the pitch, but understanding and getting to know them as people as well?
Yeah, it's important to know how people work. Everyone is different, everyone's emotions are different, everyone handles stress differently. So the only way you're going to know how different people react to different situations is by spending time with them and having conversations about it. So some people might want someone to shout at them and be like, get your head up, or some people can't stand that and just want you to kind of look at them and give them a nod or something. So it's learning how different teammates react to different things. I think it's really important, and the only way you're going to learn that is by spending time with each other.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously that teamwork and camaraderie came through, and going into the bronze medal match, which was in a lot of ways a repeat of 2017, am I right in believing, and Australia for the bronze. Sort of how did you and the team feel heading into that game?
So in the group games, we beat Australia quite convincingly. And I think, I'm not entirely sure how we felt going into that bronze medal game, but probably a bit too overconfident. And then we went into, I think it was triple overtime, golden goal. I wasn't actually on the pitch when the golden goal was being scored, but I couldn't look at the pitch. I was so nervous. But yeah, winning a bronze medal is just, yeah, coming from my first senior World Cup home with a medal is unbelievable. And in my under-19 World Cup, we lost to Australia in the bronze medal game. So I'd missed out on a on a bronze medal 3 years earlier. So to come back with one in 2022, it was great.
And there was real echoes of the 2017 final, which I think was won in double overtime, and that actually created national headlines because it happened in the UK, happened in Guildford. So I guess were there still a few members of that team from 2017 in that squad, and sort of do you think their experience and knowledge of that situation that helped you over the line?
Yeah, I think definitely there were quite a few players that crossed over between the two. A lot were different, but some were the same. And I think their experience of the game and how to handle those situations were definitely helped in that situation.
And yeah, sort of you've briefly mentioned it previously, but that moment, the golden goal goes in and you've won that bronze medal at your first World Cup. I guess are you able to describe what that feeling's like, and sort of what the celebrations were like?
It's very tricky to put into words, but it's just you go from outrageous amount of nerves to sudden joy and happiness. So I think it was also chucking it down with rain when it happened as well. So we were all just piling on each other. It was a really great day, afternoon, whole day. It was amazing.
And I know a lot of athletes don't necessarily get into sport or elite sports, just win medals. There's so many more things to it. But I guess sort of being able to come home and tell people that you're not just an England athlete, but a world bronze medalist, is that quite special to you, or is that not something you spend too much time thinking about?
I think you can pretend it's not special to you, but I think it definitely, for me personally, it is. And I've got a nice framed shirt to my left here with the medal on it as well. And it's nice to sometimes just look at it and you're like, that's pretty cool. I went to a World Cup, I've got an England shirt, and I've got a bronze medal that I also took home with me. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
And that was, yeah, a pretty amazing 2022 for you, first cap to World Cup bronze medal. Unfortunately, 2023 may not have gone so well. Yeah, if you don't mind sort of explaining sort of what happened and how you've been able to deal with it.
So I came out of 2022 probably at my peak fitness, felt very strong, very fit, and carried that through to 2023. I didn't really drop off the training. I still felt very strong and fit. And then came to May and was playing in the Fly tournament, which is a six-a-side tournament that has happened for the last 3 years. And it was my first year playing in it. So this is the second Fly weekend. Just 5 minutes into the first game of the day, changed direction. My knee just gave way and tore. Well, didn't just tear. My ACL ruptured and I tore my meniscus, which was fantastic. As nothing, I've never really had an injury that's that bad before. I've hurt my ankle, I've rolled my ankle, I've had a little twinge in my hip or hamstring. But from the second that I did it, I knew that something very bad had happened. From there, it was pretty horrible.
Yeah, I guess you mentioned not having had a major injury before. Has it been fairly sort of difficult, or was it fairly difficult to get your head round sort of having to have that extended break through essentially no fault of your own, just one of those things that happens? Or yeah, were you able to deal with it quite well, do you think?
I think as someone who religiously does all their training, I do all my weight sessions, do all my speed sessions, I make sure I do it all to try and prevent injury, and then it happens anyway. That was very frustrating and very hard to get my head around. I think the first few initial games, I was very, days afterwards, I was very lucky that I think it was literally the day after that I had my injury, I managed to get an MRI scan and see the consultant the next day. And then he obviously confirmed what I pretty much knew, that I'd ruptured my ACL, and that I needed surgery. And I think that's when it hit, when I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to play properly for about a year. And that's, it's quite hard to get your head around when something, it's not, it isn't my life because I have a job as well. So it's not like I'm a professional athlete, but it's wasn't just the lacrosse. It was the fact that it was going to affect my work. It meant that I was going to be housebound for like 5 weeks. And then the months after that, you're restricted in some way. And that's quite difficult to get your head around. And for me, I just found it very frustrating. And even now I find it frustrating. So I didn't say I got over it very well.
I don't think anybody is from previous experience, ACL injuries are hard to get your head around and hard to deal with. But I guess you mentioned there sort of you are an elite athlete in the sense that you're representing your country and performing at the highest level in your sport, but you aren't a professional athlete. How has that sort of affected your rehab? Because I guess, you know, if you're a professional footballer, a professional cricketer, you've got so many support staff just there for you. Is do you have those options and those opportunities? Do you have some support staff there to help you, or are you like the rest of us relying on private physios, NHS, that sort of thing?
So from a professional footballer, let's say, they might return to fully sport from 9 months. You see, Leah Williamson has just returned back after 9 months, and I see that, and that frustrates me. Obviously, she deserves that, but I'm thinking, if I had full-time physio, I could be playing in 2 months. There's no way now I'm going to be playing in 2 months. But we do have support. We've got S&C support, we've got physio support, but we don't see them in person every day. So I'm so thankful for my S&C guys, that Tom and Rich, that have helped me throughout the process, because like they're constantly there to advise me what I should be doing or just help me plan my week, which is obviously very helpful. Physio wise, I obviously can't be seeing a physio 3 times a day, because I'm working. So I would, for the last 7.5 months, I've seen my local physio, Tom, once a week for the last 7.5 months. And for the first 6 months, luckily my insurance covered it, but now it doesn't cover it. So my insurance clearly thinks that an injury only lasts 6 months when it actually lasts a year. But so that's been fine. And Tom and our England physio Adam have worked together throughout that period. So it's a lot more difficult when you're not a professional athlete, basically, because there's so many different people trying to communicate into one, rather than every day I turn up to training, whether I'm injured or not, and you can assess me, you can see how I am, and we can work together on that. 6 days out of 7, it's me working with myself with the help of others, but it's basically down to me whether I do what I need to do or not.
You mentioned on that note, you mentioned that pre-injury you were so dedicated to doing all the work you needed to do to stop injury. Does that then translated into, and has that helped you through that rehab, that discipline that you had before, has that sort of come to the fore and really helped you with your rehab and getting through those tough sessions and working a lot of the time by yourself?
Yeah, 100%. I think you have to have discipline to get through ACL rehab. Like, there are so many mornings where I've woken up and I just think, I cannot be bothered to do this ACL rehab. But the only way that I'm going to get back on the pitch is if I do it. Some days you feel absolutely exhausted and there's no way that you might actually not benefit from going. So there's some days where I might have been ill, or I might have just been really tired, and I know that I could potentially injure myself by doing those sessions, or I'm not going to gain anything out of it. Then those I would take a decision and be like, right, I'm going to rest today, and then I'll move my sessions around. But I think you've got to have discipline. I posted something on Instagram a while ago from Chris Williamson, said something that discipline is necessary, whereas motivation can be an extra little helping hand to discipline. But if you don't have discipline, then it's not going to happen. So I think the discipline from all that training has definitely helped, and it's why I've come so far in my ACL rehab now. Yeah. I think it's very important. But yeah, motivation has lacked throughout the process, definitely.
Is there anything that you do or that you notice that you do to try and increase or try and find a way of motivating yourself, maybe if you are feeling a bit ill or a bit down? Is there, anything that you notice that you do, or is it just that discipline coming to the forefront?
I think sometimes I have to plan my week ahead of doing stuff. I can't wake up in the morning and go, oh, what am I going to do today? That's just not how I work. I prefer going to the gym in the morning, so when I come home, I know I can just flop on the sofa, watch whatever I want to watch on TV and eat my dinner, rather than coming home and then having to have some form of motivation to do the session after a long day at work. Whereas if you wake up, you go to the gym, it's done. And then you don't have to worry about it. Yes, you have to wake up an hour or an hour and a half earlier than you would normally, but it's done. It's out of the way. So I think that's probably the way I sort of motivate myself, is just getting it done early.
Yeah, and I think also what one thing you've done is you've really detailed your story on Instagram and TikTok, and having had a look through there, and you're not just sharing highlights or this is what I've achieved. You're being quite open and honest and saying things have been difficult. Sort of, yeah. What was the was there a particular moment where you're like, I want to document this journey, or yeah, sort of what was the reasoning behind it, and how have you found doing it?
A lot of people said to me that it would be useful for me to look back on and keep a journal of some sort. I'm not one to write stuff on a piece of paper or keep a journal. I have done previously and I forget to do it, and I leave it for about 6 months and then find it. So I think my form of a journal was on TikTok and Instagram. It's for me personally to remind myself. I can flick back and go, oh my God, I literally had no quad then, or look how far I've come. But also to help other people. I've had so many people message me on Instagram and TikTok, or even comment saying, this has helped me so much, or just asking for advice. Some people don't have the support that I'm lucky enough to have. So being able to help other people, but also being able to help myself by looking back at where I was and how far I've come, definitely helps in some respects, because it's hard. This stage of rehab is hard because you don't see as many gains as quickly. Whereas in the early stages, like I went from not being able to support my own weight to suddenly being able to walk and then being able to run. Whereas now the marginal gains are much smaller. So it's useful for me to look back and go, wow, I've actually come such a long way in 7.5 months. So I think that was definitely a big part of it.
Yeah, and I know, yeah, someone who sort of I mentioned having been through ACL injury would have, yeah, appreciated knowing a little bit more about it. And like you said there, like the marginal gains at the end, sort of, yeah, seeing all those the progress, and then it slows down. But how are you sort of in terms of in where is the knee at, and sort of how are you feeling within yourself, and what your hopes for the next stages?
So I'm 7.5 months post-op at the moment. I'm aiming for to be 100% back to normal playing internationally at 12 months. Might be ambitious, but you've got to have a goal to aim for. Euros, so the European Championships, is at the end of July, which is about my 13-month mark. So that's my aim. If it's not achievable, then it's not achievable. There's no way I'm going to push it if I'm not ready. I cannot go through tearing this thing again. It's been an absolute nightmare. And I'm not doing it again. So if I'm not ready, then I won't be doing it. But if I am ready, then hopefully I will be able to start training soon and put myself up for selection and be selected for that. But that's the aim.
If you want the latest Sportspiel episodes and updates direct into your email inbox, then subscribe to our newsletter. You can find a link to do so in the show notes of this episode.
And you've mentioned a bit about it previously, but you are not just a lacrosse player, you have a full-time job. I guess if you could, yeah, if you're okay to explain a little bit more about that, and then also how, if that has helped you during your rehab, having something else to focus on, and yeah, you have the ability switch off and think about something else rather than just the knee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I work at Savills and I do commercial property. So going into a bit more detail on that, I basically have recently just started a new role in science agency. So basically leasing science buildings to occupiers in that kind of field, which is really interesting. I've worked there for the last 2.5 years, coming straight out of university, and I'm a graduate, so I'm on a graduate scheme, although I don't rotate. It's been good to do the rehab, to give something else to do and put my mind at, especially in the early days. So in the first kind of 5 weeks, I couldn't actually go to work because I couldn't drive. I was working in Oxford at the time and I couldn't drive to get to Oxford. So I had to work from home for 5 weeks. And if I was just sat on the sofa watching Netflix all day and doing my rehab every couple of hours, I probably would have gone mad. So it was quite nice to have something else to do. Did a lot of report writing, a lot of presentations in that time, because obviously I couldn't go to work. So yeah, from that point of view, it's definitely good to have something else to worry about and something else to take my mind off of the knee. From a rehab point of view and making time for it, it's obviously got its difficulties, and it has been fairly challenging to try and squeeze everything in. I think in the last couple of weeks, I've burnt out a bit over the last month, and I had to kind of take one session away from my week and give myself two proper rest days rather than try and fill it all in a week, because yes, you're training, but you're also working full time. So the two together are quite exhausting.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, sort of, how have you found that since you joined them? And yeah, playing at a high level as well. Is it quite challenging, quite taxing? And sort of what are the biggest things that you notice?
Before the World Cup, there were some days where I was doing two sessions a day. So I'd wake up at 5:30, 5:45, do a session before work, drive to work, come home, and then it would be pitch black. And then I'd do a session after work as well. So that was quite tiring. And now, even if I want to do a session in the morning, you've got to get up early and get it done. But like, I know I'm doing it for the right reason. And I've got a knee injury that I want to get better, and it's not going to get better by itself. The only way it's going to sort itself out is if I put the effort in. So that's obviously a motivator and gets me to do it.
I guess sort of, because I know, having been fortunate enough to work in elite sport, I've worked with athletes who have also had like part-time jobs on the side to sort of fill the voids during training hours and things like that. In an ideal world, if lacrosse was fully professional, do you think you would, you know, like to just be able to focus purely on the sport, or do you think you would still like to have the mixture of the two?
I think now that I've experienced the professional world and I'm involved in the industry, I would hopefully always like to stay involved with that. I think if I had grown up and lacrosse was a professional thing to do and it was normal to play lacrosse full time, then maybe I'd explore that. But I think I can't see that happening during my career, lacrosse career. So I think for me, having the professional career but also the lacrosse career is a nice mix, and I enjoy having the two together. But that could change in the future.
And how supportive have they been as an employer to you, sort of with your I guess training demands, but then also having to take time off, you know, to travel and go on tours and play in tournaments and stuff? How have Savills been with you?
I couldn't have asked for a better employer and boss. At the World Cup, they were very supportive of, obviously I had to take, 3 weeks off work. They were very supportive of that. I had to work from home for 5 weeks. They were very supportive of that. They've been very supportive. They've also sponsored me, which has obviously helped as well. So I've been very lucky to have them support me in all aspects from the early stages of my career. So big thank you to them.
And you mentioned the sponsorship there. I think, again, that's something that maybe people don't recognise, that you are self-funded. And I guess that must take its toll as well, trying to find sponsorship and sort of, yeah, the potential financial drain. How do you find that?
It is tricky, and I think us as a team have been looking for sponsors. We always are looking for sponsors to support us, and now individually some of us have started to go out to find individual sponsorship just to cover our costs. And I think a lot of people don't understand what we actually have to pay for. So like the shirt that I'm wearing now, we had to pay for. Like the training facilities that we use for our training, we have to pay for. Flights, food when we're traveling, accommodation, like everything we use or need, we have to pay for. And a lot of people don't realize that, because other sports they might not see that, or you just watch a lacrosse game and you don't think about the financial implications of the sport. And we all do it, we love it, but obviously it comes with a big chunky cost. So me going out and finding some companies and asking for their support is obviously, for me, it's a huge help. And for them, like, they can benefit from supporting a women's sport that is going to be in the Olympics. So
how did you feel when that announcement was made? I guess sort of it had been mooted for a few months, and probably for you probably know for a little bit longer, but when that list of sports was confirmed and lacrosse was on there, sort of, yeah, what were your immediate thoughts?
It's been rumoured for a very long time, and a lot of us were umming and ahhing whether it would actually ever happen. And then, as you said, it went quiet for a while. So we all just thought of, well, me personally, I thought, oh God, it's not going to happen. They're going to pick another sport. And then when it did actually happen, it's another motivator for me to get my knee sorted and do it properly. For me, I'll be 28 in the 2028 Olympics. I think that's a fairly good age for a lacrosse player. So yeah, I was very excited by the fact that I could potentially, if all goes well, be an Olympian one day, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. And how much do you think it will impact on the sports as well in this country, having it being able to show a platform like the Olympics where everyone can watch it and watch how skillful, fast, entertaining it is?
I think it will definitely grow the game globally, hopefully more at grassroots level, getting more schools involved, more clubs starting. I think we saw it with rugby sevens. I remember watching rugby sevens in the 2012 Olympics, and look how far they've come since then. And the amount of clubs that play it, the women's rugby has become absolutely enormous now. They've got a huge number of spectators, same with football. So I'm hoping that lacrosse will be that side of things, and even the men's game, just both will ramp up a bit, which will be really exciting for more people to know what lacrosse is. A lot of people do know what it is, but sometimes you speak to someone and they're like, what's lacrosse? And then you have to explain it, whereas it would be nice for someone to be like, oh my God, like, I've watched lacrosse, that's sick.
It is a very cool sport to watch. I definitely wouldn't want to do it though, but something else, I saw a quote of yours when I was looking on Instagram, and you mentioned about sort of how the Lionesses, the Red Roses, the Vitality Roses, the netball team, the cricketers have been like trailblazing for women's sport in the last few years. And we're on a fairly permanent upward curve, in that women's sport is becoming more accepted. There are more opportunities and that's growing. Is that something that you would like to aspire to as well, to be you yourself and your lacrosse team to be part of that generation that's just influencing young girls and women and saying that sport is a place for you, and we're creating these spaces for you to have the opportunities in the future?
I think definitely. I think seeing all of those ladies doing what they're doing and being an inspiration to even all of us, and as like England lacrosse players at the senior level, they're an inspiration to all of us, and seeing them being so successful and the number of supporters they have watching, like, we aspire to that. So hopefully at some point when we're at the Olympics in 2028 and we've got that huge crowd, the youngsters that are playing lacrosse, they're going to look at that and go, wow, that could be me one day. And that's the kind of inspiration you need from a young age. And that's what's going to push people through to making the commitment to then end up being where we are now.
And as a young woman yourself in sport, Have you noticed that things are changing, or do you still think there's a long way to go until true equality?
I think things are definitely changing. I think we do still have a long way to go, but yeah, we're getting there, which is good to see. And I think, yeah, it's shown in the spectator numbers, the selling out of stadiums and stuff like that. Like, you wouldn't have seen that happen 3 or 4 years ago. So I think it's definitely changing.
And I guess sort of final question from me, and hopefully your retirement is a long way off yet. You've got a good decade or more ahead of playing, but when the with the fingers crossed, but when the time sort of comes and you look back on your career, I guess if you've ever thought about it, what would you like to say that you've achieved through lacrosse?
Would definitely like to be an Olympian and win a medal at an Olympics. I think that would be a pretty cool thing to look back on and be able to say that you've done. I think I've done one world championship, so to be able to do another, and the next one's in 2026, so to be able to do that again and potentially get gold or silver would be pretty cool. So yeah, I think in the next 4 years those are probably some key goals of mine.
Well, Liv, thank you very much for joining us, and I certainly know that across the next 4 years myself and Alistair will be following your career very closely, and we hope a lot of people do as well. So once again, thank you for joining us. All the best with your rehab. And yeah, very, very excited to see what happens across the next few years for you.
Thank you.
Many thanks once again to Liv for joining us, and to the Talent Athlete Group for their help in setting up the interview. As I mentioned, we wish Liv all the best for the rest of her rehab, and we cannot wait to see what she and her team achieve in the next few years. That's all for this week, but make sure you've subscribed to Sportspill on all your usual podcast providers to get our latest episode delivered straight to you. We'll be back next Tuesday with another fantastic guest, but in the meantime, why not watch our interviews in full on our YouTube channel.